Okay, welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm your host, Austin. It's been a while since you've heard my voice on the show. It's been a really busy winter for me, and I'm getting into spring, but we're trying a new format today. You typically will have like a composer or even an ensemble on to talk about specific pieces or music that they've written or are working on, but kind of in the vein of what I was doing in the last few episodes that I've hosted, where choosing a very broad topic and expanding on it and talking about it some more, I think is something that really fascinates me, and I wanted to share with the show. And even more to the point, I know myself and other people I hang around with and colleagues are also interested in these topics. So today I have my good friend and excellent musician, composer himself, Liam Marchant, on the show with me. Why don't you introduce yourself?
What's up, Austin?
Hey, man.
It's great to be here. I ever since I met you at the summer Splice, the Splice Institute, talking about music, learning about Relevant Tones, I've been a fan of the show and fan of what you're doing, and always love our conversations. So. I don't know. I'm excited to kind of share a conversation more publicly, I guess.
Yeah, I think like this is, I talked with one of our executive producer, Seth Bosted, about like just different ways we can like branch out on the show. And this is me talking to you as a listener. If this is a format that you really enjoy, please drop us a line, because it's something new that we're trying. I'd love to have more people on the show that we talk about just like broader topics. But Liam was a no-brainer. Like you said, we met at Splice, and it was a good time, which again, I know I did the big spread on that, but good chats going on there.
Yeah, great chats going on there, continued great chats, and talking about this crazy wiggly air thing,
That's right.
this and why we get so interested in it. It's good to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're jumping into it's a very as I kind of was doing research for this show, it really is a broad topic to kind of just like throw at a wall. So it might even be something that me and you come back and revisit and talk about some other time. But this idea of kinetics in music and what kinetic energy is in the context of music, I think is, again, it's broad, but and it's almost like very obvious in a way, but it's always the obvious points that once you start to really like dissect them and think about them,
for sure. And I have to give I started thinking about kinetics in music when I started taking a specific class in it from Osnat Netzer, who's a great composer here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And she really turned me on to a lot of these ideas about thinking about kinetic or music as a kinetic energy.
Sure.
And use the word energy, and it can elicit some kind of thoughts of like, oh, the energy, man.
It's
the energy. But no, but like really understanding the motion by which music is created, having like a perceptible quality to the listener, right?
Yeah.
So like, and also like a metaphorical one as well. So
right.
It's really interesting. I have a few kind of pieces that we can, talk about kind of the kinetic listening experience.
Yeah.
Why don't you,
I'm just curious, based on like that experience and that class that you're currently or you were in, in these discussions, like what's your, kind of, I don't want to say like Reader's Digest, but like how would you, explain kinetics in music and what that means?
For sure. So like kinetics is energy that is being realized, right? So we think of potential energy and kinetic energy, a fully wound and tightened string on a guitar has mm-hmm. potential energy to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes kinetic when it gets plucked, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every expression of sound, every realization of sound in an acoustic space is kinetic energy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And even electronic music. You know, you have to, you know, there's a diaphragm that is being displaced for, you know, sound to be produced, right? So yeah. There has to be a kinetic expression in music to actually create sound, right?
Right.
And so that kind of carries us into how do we perceive that kinetic energy, right?
Sure.
What is the ways that we're able to, I don't know, recognize something as a sound versus something as music, and then how do we relate those sound objects to each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is all kind of like hinging on a topic called metaphor theory. That's by Mark Johnson, who wrote a book called Metaphors We Live By.
Mm-hmm.
Talks about how metaphors aren't just a means of like literary device, but they're a way of packaging very, very large concepts into discrete, easily digestible information, right? And so when we hear a large sound or whatever, when we hear a sound that resembles the sound of like a tea kettle going off, right?
Yeah.
We have a metaphorical response to recognize it as something as a tea kettle, right?
Yeah.
And so the way that we recognize that sound or the way that we respond to it can either be like, you know, if we hear a very high piccolo kind of make like a tea kettle-y sound.
Yeah.
There can be an image of a tea kettle that kind of comes to our mind, right?
Right.
There's a mimetic image response that can come from that. But then there's also, and this is kind of pulling from Arne Cox's text on embodied musical experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also a mimetic kinetic response as well. So when musicians specifically listen to music, when they listen to sounds that are coming, there's not just like an image that can be evoked from the sounds that they're hearing, but like when I hear, like, I'm a saxophonist, so it's like when I hear Blues for Alice being played,
sure,
I like my fingers start to kind of move to how I know how to play the transcription for it.
Sure.
But like I and many of us have that when we listen to, you know, riffs that we've heard for a long time or whatever. And we can like, you know, essentially air guitar it or whatever.
Sure. Sure.
But even without us actually physically doing it, there's part of our brain that's working to fulfill that mimetic response.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's like the potential energy really starting to manifest itself or become a manifestation of in a real space. In that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's when we think about kinetic energy inside of music, there's also this concept of like it's kind of baked into like the way that we talk about music. Like, let's have this build, you know, like let's have it build here. Building is a kinetic action by which we like add things to it. It's an additive process, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, in electronic dance music or whatever, it's like it's the drop, you know.
Yeah.
What about like the drop implies something being dropped, and perhaps it's this whole, you know,
it's something
that is like actually descending in sound, and the sound drops, you know.
Right.
But like that's, you know, it once you kind of key into how we talk about music as being like kinetic descriptors, it's like, wow, I guess it's like we're really describing, we're creating physical metaphors, kinetic metaphors for the ways that we talk about music. And there can be a lot of precision in it as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really exciting to come up with, like, at least for me, to come up with like very lengthy metaphors for how you can listen to music. And it's kind of the imaginative listening experience of, let's say, completely instrumental music, where you aren't just hearing like the physical gesture of something being pushed, but you have this whole sequence of events of something being pushed, the friction that is being imparted on that object, as well as, you know, the dissipation of. It's like all of these gestures have sorts of what Dennis Mauly says, like onset, continuation, and dissipation, which is like a term he used was like spectrum morphology.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't know. It's like a lot of these kind of concepts have, I feel like I'm lightly touching on a lot of them, and There's kind of a lot to get into on each one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, like, I don't know. I mean, what's been your, like, kinetic music listening experience?
Yeah, I think that a lot of my thing that I gravitate towards, or where my brain really kind of goes with this, is really the physicality that I see a musician doing on stage as they're performing. And this kind of goes back to my own practice. And I actually talked about this with Doug Bielmeyer on his podcast, The Process, where talking about electronic musicians and how it's all fine and well, but like myself, and this is what I was talking to Doug at the time, like seeing some person up there just like turning knobs and stuff isn't like necessarily the most engaging thing for an audience member, because you're not like, you know, you might not see what they're doing, but you're hearing it, right? But like, you're not seeing like a physical action happening or something that's causing the sound to happen. And to me, that kind of bothers me with my performance. That's why, like I started to incorporate like visuals into my performance for that reason. Like, you start to like see how the sound is manipulating the image on a screen or like on a projected image. I think the ensemble Pope Bama with Aaron Rodgers and Dennis Sullivan. Yeah, I think that they do a really. I mean, they make a concerted effort towards this as well, where. A big part of their thesis and their ensemble is they're like, if we're doing something with electronics, like we want you to see, like we hit a pedal, something happens. We touch a thing, something happens. And it's, again, it's a weird thing, I think, especially within the context of electronics, to like always have that in mind. And again, it's something that like, it's only a problem, like, I think in that context, I guess. And this is purely the physical aspect, because like you see any acoustic performance and obviously you're seeing like instruments being played and being used, and like that's the deal, right? Like, that's what it's all about. But like, you know, the second you have and actually I have a great example of this. I was doing a recording of this concert, and this ensemble had I think it was a Missy Mazzoli piece, and it had a had Fixed Media as a part of it. And where I was sitting, after it was played, like there were audience members, albeit they were a little older, so I think they just like had more general questions regarding that. But like they were kind of confused, because they were like, that's because the ensemble was, I think it was. I think it was just violin and piano. There might have been a clarinet. But the audience members were like talking about, they're like, yeah, it definitely sounded like there was something like other than the instruments being played. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, obviously. Like,
hey, you know that? Yeah, no, I totally get you. I've had this idea for, and I know there's got to be a piece out there that uses this, because it's such a cheap trick, but it's really funny, of like putting like a, like, I don't know, like a really like large tam tam, or maybe a collection of tam tams,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
a large menagerie of just like. Instruments,
yeah,
and doing a really long piece and then never using it. and because like essentially whenever you have instruments on stage,
yeah,
you have potential energy that's right to the audience, right?
Yeah,
to say,
yeah,
we're eventually going to play this, you know.
yeah
exactly,
totally,
in some capacity. And so,
yeah,
I don't know, a really easy way to make your percussionist hate you would be to just like say, hey man, we need like six concert bass drums and like, you know, like all these things, and then we're not gonna use any of them. Like,
well, that's like, do you remember that piece that Jack wrote at Splice and it had the two bass,
yeah,
drums? Like, they were used during the piece, but I don't think they were actually like, you, the percussionist, name is escaping me. June.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever like beat it with a hammer or anything. I think it might have had some transducers on it, or
I think
something.
It had some resonators, yeah.
But like you see those again, you see those two things on stage and you assume, you're like, oh, there's gonna be like probably this big moment where like
totally
double bass drum, and then like it never really happened. With that being said, Jack's piece was it's interesting to think about it now. You have an assumed perception of the energy that's going to be brought by those two bass drums. And I think that it's achieved actually through through other means that aren't, you know, you're not using those drums. Let's pull that track up actually. This might take a second. We'll cut it down, but yeah, so, you know, great. Great podcast material here. So the staging is there's a percussion setup and there's two large bass drums. There's actually a kick drum as well, but they're illuminated by like red lights. So it's like very dramatic. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a kinetic piece.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're seeing a massive spring, like coil spring, just being wound up and dropped.
No, truly. Know? And it's like losing energy too, mm-hmm. which I think is really interesting, is like the more it's used, the less like effective it is. And you're seeing, you're just seeing its lifeline basically being like pulled away from it.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Well, and you brought up the point of the kind of the potential energy of just seeing the bass drums.
Right.
So like the bass drums are, you know, behind June the performer.
And they're never even touched.
Nope. And yeah. And they're I mean we have to ask Jack, but like I'm 99% sure they're just used as like resonance and
picking
up and then going through his patch and whatever.
Totally.
But
yeah, I wish there was a bit more of like a detailed recording, because in the hall there's a lot more like detailed sounds that were like being you could hear and stuff, and that was just a live a recording of the live stream that was featured. But
for sure, you're able to imagine just in listening to it, kind of a coil, especially mm-hmm. towards the end.
Oh yeah,
kind of, you know, being wound up and dropped.
Totally,
know?
But it's also like all these sounds are being processed right through electronics as well. So like. In a way, that's just like accentuating like this energy and like, you know.
Exactly. Well, and then there's also the potential energy of the performer, June, right?
Right,
like,
right.
Like she's standing up there and we're thinking like, all right, this is a performer, you know. I mean, we see this all the time with ensembles. It's like for instrumental ensembles, string mm-hmm. quartet,
yeah.
and then in the middle of it, they start singing or something. And
right.
It's like, oh, I didn't know they did that, you know.
Sure.
And it's like, well, June starts, you know, screaming in the middle
right.
of it, and so it's like,
totally.
You know, that's some really, you know, that's always like another level of like potential energy that can get realized, right? Which I think is really. Really fascinating, right?
Yeah, totally. No, that's a cool piece. Congrats to Jack and June on that performance. I remember talking to them afterwards too. Just like, there's no score that June's really looking at either, and it sounded like it was like a very like collaborative effort between the two of them, which is also very cool. And they kind of co-wrote the piece in a way. So, very cool to see that happen.
Yeah. No, it's rad.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely. Rad. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that kind of like, so when I was thinking about this idea for the show, and I might have brought this up a little bit, but like, yeah, it's very much to me, I was thinking about like the mechanical aspect of it and like composers that use physical like machines and stuff like that to realize energy in a way. And sometimes, and maybe this is, I don't know if this is correct or incorrect, but like, I was also thinking of like, how music might respond to a physical thing, which is what we're talking about. This piece by Kelly Sheehan that I was drawn to, she wrote this, or she programmed this Arduino thing to react to this like maze game with like the like three balls inside of it, and then you have to like kind of get them to the center or whatever. And then my understanding is that when the three I think like ball bearings or whatever are like close to each other, that's when the like it triggers the sound that's going to happen, kind of thing. So in a way, like, I mean, it's all this energy, right, of these three like ball bearings moving around in this maze. But then like when they collide, that's when like, you know, the sound starts to kind of be realized in a way. So that was a piece that I was really drawn to. Let's pull that up real quick.
Thank you.
Yeah, every time I watch that, it's
so, Austin, you gave like a this whole watch is like somebody trying to like solve a like a maze, like one of those ball mazes with three different balls, and it's it's a wild watch. It's like
it's a little stressful, to be honest.
It's a very stressful watch, and because it's like all these three balls on just like one of those handheld mazes, and you're trying to get it in, and like you were it's like the music like will like poke through the silence if like they're lined, if the balls are lined up.
I think it's like, I think it's like if there's at a certain, I wonder if it like tracks the maze, like if they're on the correct path maybe to like get to it. But like, yeah, no, it's like, so that's like the silence, it's the music's getting like cutting in and out. And
it reminds me a lot of what's that, like the two slot experiment in like quantum physics or whatever, where it's like,
the
waves like going through these like two slots, and it's like makes like, it's like the whole particle and wave kind of thing. And so
sure.
The whole thing is just like trying to imagine like what the underlying layer is through like all of these like little holes or whatever.
That's
where
so
you're
funny.
Just, you know, the listening experience is like pretty interesting in that regard. It's like frustrating, but it's also like what's behind these like moments of silence. You know?
Right. And, right. Yeah.
It kind of like, I don't know, those, that's really cool. And like, especially like the visual component of it is just like if I was at that showing of this, I would stand up and clap for like getting all the balls in the center and completing the maze, you know?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
be like, oh yeah, we made it. You know,
I like how jongly.aif made its way.
I know, jongly.aif. I heard that and I was like, oh my, like we got jungle beats. We got jungle beats. I love it.
That's so funny. But again, really like interesting example of like obviously like the energy of the balls moving around in the maze is like it's really unpredictable and like really hard to control. So if you think about like, you know, someone playing their instrument, like who has mastered their craft, has full facility over it and stuff. This is, I think, is an example of someone who doesn't have full facility of what is causing the sound to happen.
Exactly.
And, yeah, and not to mention like every performance is going to be wildly different because like of that amount of unpredictability and like because this is like I'm sure like I would be proven wrong. I'm sure people like do this competitively. I'm sure that there are people that are like doing these mazes like competitively in some capacity. Sure, we can do that. But like I think the purpose is to it kind of make it, to struggle with it.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of like the point of the object that they're using to like trigger the sounds is like, yeah, it's kind of, it's hard, you know,
and
it's tedious, you know?
No, it is. And you brought up kind of this, you know, kind of like kinetics in music as well as this relationship with mechanics, right? Or like an object, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like levels of predictability that always exist with like writing for musical instruments, especially like objects that aren't, you know, I guess, you know, regarded as musical.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
Because there's also a level of unpredictability with just instruments as well.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
That we kind of have a relationship with, just depending on humidity or temperature.
No, totally. And like, I remember like in orchestration, one of my teachers being like, you know, French horns, like they plan on fracking a note every concert. Like, you know, like some instruments are just like, you know, more likely to kind of be temperamental than others.
Exactly. And it's like that relationship that you have with, I don't know, this is actually a really interesting segue into the piece that I brought, which is just like,
yeah,
objects, right? Like,
yeah,
how do we relate with objects kind of in a sonic sense,
yeah,
but then also in just like, I don't know, you use the word mechanical, right? Like,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
and mechanical as like describing like, you know, this mechanism that a person is interacting with to create some sort of like sonic outgrowth, right? Or some sort of like consequence comes from it, right?
Yeah.
But it's really hard because like, what gives an object its objectiveness? What gives a mechanical thing its mechanical? You know,
sure,
like all of these kinds, yeah, of things. It's really, it's kind of, I mean,
these are a little, it is a little loaded, or it's assumed in a way.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to get too into like a, I don't know, like a weird linguistics or like,
yeah,
semantics,
yeah, yeah,
argument,
yeah,
or,
yeah, yeah,
or whatever, because we all have like an idea of what is mechanical.
Yeah.
You know, and we all have an idea of like what is, you know, all of these things in terms of the Malin Bong piece that I brought.
Yeah,
she's using three different kinds of air characteristics.
Mm.
And one of them is mechanical, actually.
Oh, okay,
so
yeah,
it's really interesting to kind of, you know, pair it with the piece that we just heard as well. And so,
yeah,
so it's a piece called Hyperoxic, which is a and Malin Bong is a Swedish composer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teaches at Darmstadt and is like,
yeah,
really,
yeah,
interested in a lot of noise-based compositions as well as like larger ensemble pieces that you know, use objects that aren't necessarily just like readily, you know,
yeah, yeah,
using found object kind of composition work as well. And so I found this piece hyperoxic meaning it's a sensation of having too much oxygen in your body. And so,
yeah,
and she wrote it to be a celebration of breathing. And so a celebration of breathing implies like the motion of air or like the pressure differential of air. You
sure,
know?
Sure.
And so she's using three different kinds, which is organic air, communicative air, and then mechanical air. And organic air, again, like all of us have this idea of what is organic air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this kind of discontinuous, we could say random, but the way that like wind presents itself just kind of in like coming off a, you know, the lake or whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of predictable when it starts, you know,
right,
but we don't know when it's going to start and we don't know when it's going to end, you know.
Sure.
Once it starts to go away, we're like, oh, it's kind of dying down, and then another one can come. So there's a level of predictability and then unpredictability in terms of its onset.
Mm-hmm.
And then communicative air, what she describes as being the air used for conversation. So if,
okay,
we just removed all of like the pitch material as well as like the, I don't know, consonant material that we have in our speaking voice, we would,
yeah,
have these.
Yeah.
You know, which is somewhat more predictable. It has like this rhythm to it or like this periodic nature, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she also uses this idea of mechanical air, which is coming from a bicycle pump, a hand fan, also at one point like a very large balloon.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, you want to talk about potential energy too. It's like seeing this performance, it's like there's this massive balloon just on stage.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are they going to do with that balloon? Are they going to pop it? Are they going to,
yeah,
you know, are they,
yeah,
going to do, I'll let the listener decide what they think happens to this balloon.
Sure.
But, we also have a very obvious like object, which is, like the performers themselves, like the,
yeah,
the performers themselves and their ability to breathe and create wind noises as well.
Sure.
If it's as being a celebration of breathing, we relate with their breaths as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of just an introduction to the piece,
yeah,
but it's a pretty interesting listen.
Yeah. Let's give it a listen. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, man. Yeah, no, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's a lot of different wind characters that you're able to just kind of get out from that. And so
yeah.
Once I kind of understood that she was kind of approaching it from those three different kind of sources,
yeah.
You also start to realize that something that is communicative and can also be organic, can present itself in something that's organic.
Well, I think that's interesting is because all three types of air are presented simultaneously.
Yeah.
So it's not just we're doing this, and then this. So it's up to the listener to kind of decipher what they, I think visually as you watch the concert, it's pretty clear, but if you're just listening to the audio, our listeners will be, it's kind of interesting to play the game of what's coming from what and how are they interacting with each other. And
exactly.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the sound of air coming through a bass flute head joint versus air coming through a bicycle pump versus a handheld balloon pump.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those have different rough pitches with them,
mm-hmm,
but then
mm-hmm.
they also have different I don't know.
Timbres, yeah. And characteristics, all that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
No, it's fascinating. And yeah, so this has been a fun piece to kind of dive into for me, and especially, looking at music expression, especially kinetic music expression, through a noise based lens,
yeah.
instead of a pitched one.
Yeah.
There is plenty of pitch in this piece as well.
Yeah.
Even just the first kind of gesture of the flute sound, and then the low pitched kind of tapping on the end on the end of the flute, that's pitched material.
But I think it's when you break down something like this, it's kind of nice to even take it a step further and maybe remove focus on things that are less pitch oriented, because then you're really forced to engage with the very primal and basic tenets of the topic itself,
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Great, man. Well, I think that's about all we have time for today on this topic. But any closing thoughts? Anything else you want
to
impart into the world?
Not really. this is a really broad topic, and there's much more to talk about.
Yeah.
And I feel like I kind of just briefly touched on a few interesting works that have been kind of introduced to me.
Yeah. But well, let's do it again.
Sure.
I think this is a worthwhile thing to talk more about. And you as a listener, if you like this format, drop us a line, on the Relevant Tones website. And we'll catch you next time.
For sure.
Yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed my chat with Liam and talking about kinetics. I think this is definitely a topic we're going to revisit and have him back on the show to talk about, because like you said, there's a plethora of things that we kind of glossed over, and maybe we'll take a little deeper dive into it. I know this is a little bit of a different format than what we're used to, so if you like it, drop us a line. If you don't like it, also drop us a line. We'd love to hear any feedback you have. We're trying to do a few new things and see if we can engage our listeners in a different way. So if you have a topic you would want to cover or know of an individual we should maybe reach out to speak with, that could also be interesting too. So this is your reminder that Relevant Tones is a product of Access Contemporary Music. Find out more at acmusic.org, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks, folks.